maybe you try one thing and it doesn't work or it changes, then just flex with it. You have to be agile as an entrepreneur and flex.
Hi, and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher. And today I have a special guest. I am joined by, I'm going to say your last name wrong. I'm going to do my best. Bibi Gignile. Is that wrong? Tell me how to say it.
The easiest way to remember it is gin a lot. Like, I drink gin a lot, but I don't.
Okay.
I'm not drinking any yet.
Bibi gin a lot. That is how
you
say
it. Yes, you got it. You got it.
Okay. I've always said that wrong then. So hi, Bibi. Anyway, thank you for being here.
Excited to be here.
So Bibi, a very brief introduction from me, and then she will correct me if I've missed anything out. But Bibi is an artist I followed on Instagram and online for, I think, as long as she's been going, pretty much. She's in Southern California. She paints certainly primarily abstracts. Maybe you do something else. She had a former career as a businesswoman, owning her own business, as did I. And I thought that would be a really good introduction into a topic that I'm not sure we've discussed on Art Juice, which is our main topic will be art as a second act, or an art career as a second act. So having done something else, then built a successful art career after that. Bibi works in the ICB building in Sausalito, which is a massive building filled with artists, from what I understand. I have not been to it. She holds open studios there. Her work is also shown in several galleries. And she's just an amazing businesswoman. And if you know anything about her or you follow her on Instagram, you'll see how many paintings she sells. It's miraculous and amazing. What is your website, Bibi, and your Instagram before we get started so people can look that up?
Yeah, thank you. It's Bibi Art, B-I-B-B-Y, art.com. And my Instagram is Bibi, B-I-B-B-Y, G-Art.
Perfect. So, because I always find that frustrating when I'm on a podcast and they're talking about some to an artist and I want to go look them up and see, and they don't say until the end where you can find them. So if as you're listening, you want to look up Bibi, you can do that while we're talking. So did I miss anything, first of all? I know that's a very potted history. I'm sure I missed all sorts.
Well, I'll just talk really briefly. I painted at age 10, and then I had a critical teacher and became a perfectionist. So I stopped painting and did all sorts of things, from being a computer programmer to working in adventure travel to working at Williams-Sonoma in marketing. And then most recently, for 20 years, I ran a hands-on cooking party business that did corporate team building events in the kitchen. And the whole time I was doing that, I had this calling to do art, but I hadn't done it in years. So I was trying to figure out what my next step was. And this is my first piece of advice for people, is while you have a good solid income, you can dip your toe in the art arena and see how it works for you and get yourself up and running before you take the training wheels off of letting go of your business income. So that's what I did. I started painting in 2014. I took Nick Wilton's 6-week class that he had in his studio. It was one night a week. And I was literally the worst one in the class. However, and people will say, no, you weren't. And if I showed you my pictures, I can send you one if you want to see it. When people see it, they're like, you were the worst.
Oh, okay. You were the worst. Yeah.
With pipe cleaners and straws and all sorts of things. But the difference is I had determination. So I decided after that class to get a space in the ICB building. And so I got 100 square feet and I felt like an imposter. Didn't even want to leave my studio. And I just kept trying to learn and showing up, all while I was running my business. So I found all the right teachers. And another bit of advice is find, you know, unlike a master's where you kind of have to take classes, the beauty of what I did was, and I'm still doing, is finding all the right teachers and just continuing to sharpen the saw. So I had this 100 square foot space in the building and then moved up to 400 square feet. And now I'm in almost 1500 square foot studio where, you know, I teach classes here and have an online class. So
I know there'll be some people listening who'll say, wait, you were the worst student in the class, in your mind at least, you were the worst person there. And yet you thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll take out a studio, pay rent, so at risk, and I'll go and I'll do this thing and I'll commit to it in some way or another. I know you still had your business at that point, but to take out a studio, it had to be in your mind that, right, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it work. I suppose it's very hard to answer, but what is that? That is courage and risk-taking on a level that I think some people will find hard to understand.
Yeah, I think the reason it didn't feel so risky is because I had the training wheels of my income with my business. And so that's one of the biggest pieces of advice is, like, if you have another source of income, it makes it easier to take a risk. And I also think in general, it's a philosophy of mine that risks not taken are more risky than taking the risk, if that makes sense.
I love that.
I don't want to have any regrets in life. And I knew it was in me because I did well at age 10 and I just needed to find my way. And I just showed up and found all the right teachers. And I realized one of the reasons I didn't do so well in that class is because I was more of a collage artist. And so the second teacher I found was a collage artist. And I realized, oh, now I'm finding my way.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I was the same as you in that I had a business when I started, even when I started teaching, mm-hmm. Which has become my primary source of income now. Mm-hmm. It makes more money than my paintings do. I don't make enough paintings. I'm nowhere near as prolific as you. If I had to live on how many paintings I actually get made in a year, I'd be starving. But I started the painting and the teaching while I still had that income for the same reason as you did. Mm-hmm. I was taking a big risk because I was investing money in Facebook advertising to build an audience. And I didn't have anything to sell them. I just knew, like you, I had a marketing background to some extent, not professional like yours, but I taught myself marketing in my prior business. So I knew I need an audience before I can sell anything. So let me just get an audience and figure it out as I go. Mm-hmm. But that income from the other business, it just made so much possible. But what it did mean, and I'm wondering if this is the same for you, is that I had to work weekends and nights and extra time because I had to make money running that business. Did you have to put in extra hours to do this?
Yeah, but I feel like, and I still feel this way, that art making is not work for me. Mm-hmm. It brings so much passion and joy to me that it doesn't feel like work. So I would work all day and I was feeling sort of like an imposter at work. Like I would show up at work and I'd push papers around. I delegated everything. So I had nothing mm-hmm. left to do at work, but I would show up and I realized one day, like, I'm being an imposter here. I need to take that courageous action step and sell my business. But I decided that after I had enough of a runway with art, I was starting to sell at open studios and I hadn't yet started teaching, but I was starting to sell enough to know that if I sold my business, I would have enough of a runway for 2 years or so to make artwork. And when I finally moved into this 1500 square foot space, which had a $3,000 rent and I was scared to death about it, that's when I started teaching. And I had run into Nick Wilton and in the hallway and I said, you know, that I was going to maybe teach, but I was scared. And he said, well, you have to start before you're ready. And I loved that mm-hmm. line. And so I started teaching before I was ready. And I had a few friends come over and I did a makeshift class and I practiced on them. And then I don't think anyone knew it was my first class when I taught it, you know.
I think there's an important point that you made there, which is you found proof, you found evidence before you gave up the business that this was going to work if you gave it enough time. And I think sometimes that's a step that I see some people missing out. It's great to have faith and leap in. And if you can afford it, fantastic. If you don't have to worry about money, that's great. But I couldn't do that. And I needed to prove to myself. And my first course that I taught was like 30 people or something. And it wasn't that much money, but it was enough to tell me, okay, then if I really had enough time and energy, like you're saying, to put everything into this instead of it being a little side thing, maybe I could turn it into something. And so then, like you, I felt ready to take the risk. So I actually had on my notes risk taking written down, but it's not risk, it's calculated risk taking in both of our cases, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I'm not just shooting in the dark. And I think that's the thing about an entrepreneur. You throw a lot of stuff against the wall that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And you just keep throwing till you find things that do work. And I can't tell you how many things I've tried that haven't worked. And then, you know, you get one in five that do work and you're just thrilled.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you would have learned that from your background. You said you had 20 years marketing and then you ran your own business. So you would have marketed there too.
Yeah, marketing and PR, and you know, I kind of did a little bit of everything there, right?
Yeah, so that's an amazing background. And you know, Alice, who I do this podcast with almost every week when it's Alice and I, she didn't have any of that when she started her art career because she'd been an employee in a company. She was a graphic designer, so she had some design experience, but she talks a lot about having had to go learn it all. Like go on YouTube, go take courses, go and watch what other people were doing to learn how to build a website, use social media, get a mailing list together, all of the businessy things. And it proves that it can be done because she only took a year or two to have caught up completely and have all that down and to have found her own way to do it. But I think the important thing you said to me before we started is, you have to do it, whether you've got prior experience or you're coming into it now. Talk more about that.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things about being an artist if you want to not be a starving artist. And I don't believe in the starving artist myth. But you have to like or learn to like to do business. And it's kind of like, I don't really like to exercise, but I know I need to exercise if I want to be healthy. So I exercise. It's the same with business. You might not like it, but you have to do it. And so why, you know, there's a great saying that there's an argument with reality when, you know, there's resistance to something and it causes so much suffering. And if you just stop arguing with reality and do it, you'll get the benefits. And so I like business. So I feel like I'm lucky, but if someone doesn't like business, you either need to hire someone or find an intern or, learn to like it.
Yeah. Because I mean, this applies, even if you think, well, I'm not going to sell my own paintings. I'm going to find galleries to represent me.
Yeah.
They don't just find you. So even then you have to have the self-promotion piece so that people, I mean, there are very rare occasions. I met an artist recently who was discovered and invited into a gallery. Then they sold all his pieces. Then David, if you're listening, it's you, David Menken in Cornwall. He had just started painting and then somebody from a gallery saw his work and then they invited him to make more and then they all sold and he's brilliant. So it's not surprising, but it was a case of someone just walked into his house and saw the painting. But that is very rare. I mean, for most of us, you're going to need to go find those galleries. And I think that's the piece people don't necessarily want to accept. But I agree with you. You have to do that. Why is it fun for you? Can we break that down? Like, I think I enjoy it because it's a different creative challenge. Like, how am I going to get people how am I going to get more people on my mailing list? How am I going to get people to watch this video or read this newsletter or whatever it is? And then I have to be creative about it. I have to think of a solution. And I think I enjoy that piece of it.
Yes, it's creative problem solving. And the beauty of, you know, being like I'm the CEO of me, unlike what I was doing in my company, where I was running a business with 60 employees. And I was, you know, anyway, spending a lot of time managing that. Like this is creative problem solving. And I think I've always enjoyed doing it ever since I was little. I was an entrepreneur selling Kool-Aid and then beads. And then I sold golf balls on the golf course. So I get kind of a thrill out of sales.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that don't, and that's okay. So just, you know, a lot of times people will say, oh, you know, I don't like selling at open studios. I was like, well, get a friend that likes to do it. You know, have a friend work with you. Yeah. There's a lot of creative solutions to problems. So, you know, and one other comment I want to say back to, you know, having to do marketing. I remember a couple open studios ago, someone was complaining on the third floor about no one coming to their studio. And I said, well, what did you do to promote it? And she said, nothing. And I'm like, you reap what you sow. So if you do the work, you will see results. It might take a while, but you will see results.
I think that's a very good point about it, how long it takes. Mm-hmm. I found with my painting sales, particularly, it was a couple of years of continual posting. I was using Facebook and Instagram primarily, and it was a couple of years of consistent posting before things started to sell on a more regular basis. And then it felt a bit like a ball going down a hill that gets faster and faster. So, yep. But at first it took ages to get going down that hill. And it's very easy to give up, isn't it, at that point?
So true. I have a friend that has a jewelry business, and she did her first jewelry show, and she sold one piece and she was really discouraged. And so now she's not going to do any more of them. And it's just like, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You just have to keep showing up and showing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody was telling me about, I think it's John Grisham, the author, and might be Stephen King. So if I've got this wrong, I think it's John Grisham who got like
John Grisham
50 something rejections for his first novel before he got an acceptance. And it takes a while when you send a novel out, it takes a while for someone to get back to you. So imagine how long he was waiting for envelopes to come through saying, nope, no, we don't want it. We don't want it. And now look at his sales. So, and it could be someone else. So I might have made that up, but somebody.
No, you're right. It's him. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about, I want to go back to that mindset thing that I brought up, because I think this is one of the things I see about you. Risk taking and calculated risk taking is part of the mindset I see that I think makes you successful. But I think it's more than that. I think it's a belief in yourself and a belief. Well, I'm putting words into your mouth. So what is it, do you think, that in your mindset that's different from some of the people you come across who are perhaps not doing as well?
Okay, so I got to backtrack a little bit, because when I was trying to figure out to leave my company, I decided I would do two things, not just art. I went and got a vocational master's in energy medicine from the Academy of Intuition Medicine in Sausalito. And there it was a lot about clearing the clutter. Michael Singer talks about how if there's rocks in the river, it blocks the flow. So I spent, you know, a year and a half in this program clearing the clutter internally and looking at mindset a lot about thoughts creating reality and that sort of thing. And it was so interesting because I was starting to paint at the same time that I was taking that course. And as I cleared the clutter, as I like to say, or all the societal and family programming, and beliefs, negative beliefs and stuff, as I was clearing all that, I was watching my art just go like that. And people were like, gosh, you've gotten good so quickly. And it's because a lot of that mindset negativity, and I still have to work on it, but a lot of that has cleared. And I feel like I'm a clear vessel to channel And that's why I'm fairly prolific now. I was noticing yesterday the ease that I'm sometimes, I kind of was like, I sort of miss the struggle. And that's not to say that I don't have struggling moments, because I definitely do, but it's a lot less. You know, I would struggle and struggle, and I look at some of my earlier work and I see the struggle in the work. And as I've cleared more and more, I see more of a freedom in my work.
Yeah, I think I see freedom. I see joy. I see it makes perfect sense what you've just said, because I see massive self-acceptance. I see mm-hmm. someone who's just allowing themselves to do whatever comes through and not editing or holding back or inhibiting anything. And
one of the principles I'm working on now, and I talk about it a lot in my in-person classes, is that, you know, non-attachment, because that's what blocks the flow. So, you know, I'll walk over to a student and they'll be like, oh, I'm stuck. And I just love this part. I don't want to erase it. But if, you know, it's almost like if they just painted over that, something else better would emerge. But it again, it comes to mindset and just trust that something better will come along. And I have to practice that with myself, because I get attached as well in life and in my art. But the more I'm unattached and surrender to the painting, the more comes through.
And then that has for you translated into sales.
Totally. And people feel the freedom and the joy, and they want that. And they want, you know, the art makes them feel good. And they want it. And it really hit home, because it really came through in the last, I'd say in the last year and a half, I feel like I really hit my stride finally. I finally woke up one day and I looked at my art and I'm like, I'm all grown up now. That's not to say there's something to improve, but I was always like catching up with everybody else a lot, especially a lot of the artists in the building who had been doing it for a lifetime or many years more than I had. And so I finally felt like I caught up about a year and a half ago, and that translated into this last year, both last year and the year before, incredible art sales, where I was making more as an artist than I ever did as a business owner.
Brilliant. And that is, did you think that was possible at the beginning?
Because there's that myth of that artists have to starve. And I bought into it initially, but then I'm like, no, that doesn't have to be. That's just a limiting thought that can just go out the window. And you certainly have proven that as well, way more so than I have.
Yeah, I mean, you must... It's so hard. I had so many limiting beliefs, and I've talked about them on the podcast, and I still have a lot. But the ones that I was able to clear, as you say, mine were around money. And so when I was building this audience, but I still had this belief that, but I have to work on this other business to pay the mortgage, because I presume I thought I can't make any money as an artist. So this will always be a side thing. And when somebody, actually an energy worker, helped me clear that belief, and when that went away, it was literally, I think, a bit less than two weeks after that session with her, that I had had the idea for my course, and had it all in one go, like, I get it. I know exactly what I should teach. I know exactly why I'm the right person to do it. I know how to do it. I have refined it since, but it makes me frustrated with myself, actually, if I'm honest, that I know that's possible. I know that once you get rid of those beliefs, it just opens up and anything can come in, but getting rid of them is really hard on your own. That is tough.
Yeah. And I've done a lot of energy work as well. So I believe in getting assistance if you need it. And I do my own self-healings and meditations and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So do you feel this would have been a lot longer journey for you had you not gone and taken that qualification as well?
Yes. Yes. And now I just have such a strong understanding of the importance of thoughts and that kind of thing. And I did some classes with Joe Dispenza, and he's all about rewiring your brain and that kind of thing. And
I love that you're saying this, because I hadn't made the connection, although it's obvious, between the freedom in your paintings and the fact that you had had that qualification, although I'd seen that on your website. But it makes total sense. And that kind of thing is now available to us in the UK. We're always behind on that kind of thing. But even in my little way out of the way towns around here, they now have Reiki and energy workers and all sorts of things. So that kind of thing is available to us. And I do think, even if you're listening and you think, oh, this is just a load of woo-woo nonsense, I don't believe in this stuff, can you at least believe that what you are thinking is affecting the actions you're taking? Because if you think, well, there's no money in making art, then you are not going to take the actions that Bibi's taken to build a business. That's just not going to happen because you already believe it's pointless. Yeah. So even if you can't, haven't had any experience of the spiritual side of it, I think even the most logical people can get with the idea that yes, what I believe dictates how I act, and how I act dictates some of what happens, at least not everything, of course.
And people feel your energy too. So if you're like, oh, my art's not that good, people are going to pick up on that, right?
So,
let me throw out there that the Academy of Intuition Medicine, where I went, has an online program now. So if any of your listeners are interested in it, and it's based in Sausalito. So if you're in the Bay Area, you could always take the class in person, because she does it in person, but she launched an online class during COVID.
Oh, that's interesting. Because it's something I feel is a key to whatever success I've had. I don't want to set myself up as like some kind of guru, but I do think one of the key things is in mindset is I go with whatever's happening and I don't spend a lot of time getting upset and negative about it. And I'm particularly thinking of the Instagram changes that happened like last year. Mm-hmm. And I had all these artist friends posting like campaigns to get Instagram back to what it was. And I was watching it more from the perspective of, interesting, I wonder if Instagram's not going to be such a good tool for me going forward. I'm going to put a bit more effort into YouTube just in case, because I feel like that's done well for me. My Facebook fan page has never really not done well for me. So maybe I need to think a bit more about that. I think it's an attitude of, maybe it goes back to the business, but just what's working. And if it's not working, it's what you said, don't argue with reality, just go with the reality and say, okay, so what now if that's not going to work?
Yeah, you got to course correct. And so I always like to say mistakes are portals of discovery. So maybe you try one thing and it doesn't work, or it changes, then just flex with it. You have to be agile as an entrepreneur and flex. And basically, anyone that's an artist trying to make it as a business is the CEO of yourself, and you are the entrepreneur, even though you might not want to call yourself that. And so you have to just course correct constantly as an artist. And one other practical thing I want to say based on that is I spent a lot of time focusing on Facebook and Instagram initially. And then I remember Marie Forleo, because I took her B school course, said the platforms of Facebook and Instagram are owned by those companies, whereas your own mail list, either physical mailing address list or email list, is owned by you. So Instagram can change the algorithm a million times and it's going to affect things. But your mailing list and how often you mail to it is yours, and you can do whatever you want. So use those tools as vehicles to get people on your own list.
Yeah.
And then mail to them as often as possible. And
I love that. Yeah. How often do you mail to them, just to stay on mailing list for a minute?
I was mailing, and this was one of the best business pieces of advice I had gotten, was to do a newsletter bi-monthly. And I was doing it bi-monthly up until COVID hit. And then I went to about once a month, and that's what I'm doing now. But I initially, this is a flexible thing. Initially I was doing it every 2 weeks rigidly. And then COVID came and we all had to be more flexible. That's one of the gifts of COVID. And I decided I was getting burnt out doing it every 2 weeks and I didn't want to work that hard. The business side, I do want to work on the business side. Don't get me wrong, but every, 2 weeks was too much. And so I didn't want to exhaust my list and make them tired of hearing from me. And I wanted it to be more like a special occasion. So I switched it to about once a month, although I will on some months do twice a month if I have an open studios coming up or something.
I love that you would, I know we're going to talk about reels and I want to tie that to what you just said about newsletters, because I absolutely love writing. And I always have loved writing almost as much as painting. So I do a weekly artist newsletter. And then once a month, I send it to everyone because some people choose just to hear about my art. Some people choose to hear. So I do it every week. And I absolutely love doing it. It's like a little ritual on either a Friday night or Saturday morning. I sit down with a coffee and write the newsletter and I enjoy it. But I hate reels and can't stand doing them, and you are a genius at them. And I just wanted to make that point to everyone that it can be any one of these things that are available to you. Just do the one you love, because just as Bibi said about doing what you love in painting comes through, so it does in business. If everyone can feel that you labored over your newsletter and you resented having to write it, nobody's going to want to read it. But if they feel like you really loved writing it, it'll be entertaining to read. And tell us about your reels, because you rather than objecting, you just went, right, well, I'm doing reels. Maybe you were already doing them before. Tell us about your success with them.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think is really important for business is to watch trends. And so I remember when I had my company and I walked in, I used to read the San Francisco Business Times. And so I would be abreast of trends. And I would look for trends, not consciously, but just if something looked like a trend, I would jump on it. So the first thing that happened at my business was I remember reading about Facebook, and I walked in and all my employees were like 20 years younger than I was. And they had never heard of Facebook. And I told them, I said, everybody's got to get on Facebook. So I became an early adapter of Facebook. And I did the same with Instagram. I was an early adapter of Instagram. And then, I'm not always up on the trends with Instagram, but I did notice and read somewhere that Instagram wanted to compete with TikTok. And that I thought to myself, okay, if Instagram is in, like, Instagram will go like a couple months investing in one thing and then they switch to something else. So I was always watching what they were focusing on. It was stories for a while, then it was videos and live stuff for a while. And I noticed it was moving to Reels to compete with TikTok. So I decided I would jump on the bandwagon. And I was feeling a little bit like I was always promoting myself, like, hey, mom, look at me, look at me, look at me. And one of my colleagues, and this is the beauty of having a community, said to me, why don't you show tips? Because you love teaching. And I was like, oh, that felt so right, because it didn't feel like I was promoting myself. And so I started doing tips that I teach in my class. And I would have various artists come over and film me, and literally we wouldn't spend more than 2 minutes on it. And so I started doing that, and I noticed, wow, I would post these and they would get a lot of followers. This was early on in Reels. And I did one that got 650,000 views. It was my best one to date. And I did it in like 2 minutes, and it was fun. So I decided to go for it, and I started doing it all the time. And now when I post them, I don't get that many likes, but I just did one recently for my open studios. And I've been doing this now for every open studios. When right before the open studios, when my studio's all cleaned up, I walk through, I do a Vanna White.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
My studio, and that one's gone viral. So they send them out virally. So that would be a tip I would say to people, is find something fun to do on Reels and just do them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to what I was saying about reacting as in seeing it as a trend and I'm going to capitalize on it, versus seeing it as a trend And I'm just going to stamp my feet and say, I don't like it. And it's not what I want to be happening. Because we can't, I mean, besides anything else, as you get older, the world gets younger and things change. And you either become a grumpy old man saying, get off my lawn, or you go with the way it's changing. And you can choose, but you have to know the choice has consequences. Like, if I choose to be a grumpy old man, no one will want to come and play with me. So,
yes, exactly.
But this idea of community, let's talk about that, because you mentioned that you get someone else to film you because you're in this building with all these people. How important is being in that building to you?
It is. I just got the chills as you asked that. It is so important. And there's 150 artists in the building, and it's a way to connect with other artists on a lot of levels. First of all, you know, I've learned so much about art from my colleagues. Like, they'll come in and they'll give me a critique randomly, and I'll learn something because there's a lot of talent in this building. Number one. Number two, we tell each other opportunities that are going on, you know. And so I've learned about shows and they've learned about shows. I refer them clients, they refer me clients. So that's important. And then I teach in the building, and so it's a great way to be able to teach. And then lastly, you know, we have been building the brand of the building. And so we get a lot of people coming through for open studios. So I probably do 50% of my art sales through my studio. And the beauty of that is you get to keep 100% of the revenue, right? Versus sharing 50% with a gallery or something. And you can control the shots more than, you know, if a gallery's controlling it or whatever. And you have to do more of the work, like getting it shipped to the client and whatever, but you get to call the shots. And so I like that. And I can't tell you, like, there are about 20 people, and I'm really talking to your audience here, that had home studios, and I've convinced them to come in the building, and it usually takes about a year to convince them. And then the second they get in the building, they're like, oh my God, it's been life-changing. And you see their art going like this because they're just a wall of mirrors at home, not having any feedback, I do think there's the energy of the building. We all are up-leveling. And so we're energetically feeding on each other. Blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, I wish there was
things to have that community. And it's like a college dorm. Like, there'll be a given day, probably six people will stop by to say hi and we'll chat and whatever. Sometimes it's a little distracting, but
yeah. <fun. laughs> I was just about to say, oh, that would be so great, because one of my problems here is when you have a studio at home, there's always interruptions. There just always is. People don't see it as a workspace in the same way, but it sounds like you get just as many interruptions there. But I would, if I lived there, I would be one of the ones you wouldn't have to talk into it, because it sounds amazing. And I think community is so important. Where I am, there is nothing like that. But it would be great if there was. I always think I have a home studio, but I would much prefer an environment like that. I think if you don't have something like that where you are, then I think the next best thing is probably online. And obviously I have an online community, but I'm not promoting that particularly. It doesn't have to be a paid one, but just a group of people who you feel like you can. I remember Alice set up a group right when I first met her, and there was only about 20 of us in it initially. And just having, I remember saying, oh, I've got paint all over all my clothes, and other people saying, oh, so have I, and I use this to get it off. And it was like, oh, finally, people who don't point at me and say, why are you covered in paint? People who also get covered in paint and know how to remove it from clothes. For some reason, that really stuck in my mind. And since then, like you say, the online group I belong to where that I don't run is Alice's group, Connected Artist. And in there, the inspiration of seeing what other people are doing is it lights the fire under you. Like you say, it lifts everybody up if you're part of a community like that, I think.
Yeah, and the idea sharing, you know, from equipment to techniques, you know, to whatever helps. Yeah, really helps.
The other thing I'm thinking about as I listen to you talking in all of this, because you said about people giving you feedback, you have a constant drive to improve. Like you're constantly looking to improve all aspects, painting, can I do reels better? What can I do differently? And I've always felt that is a key differentiator between the people who give up quickly and the people who don't. It's almost like sometimes the people who give up quickly feel like this should have come easily. And if it doesn't come easily, it's not for me. I'm not talented enough. I don't have what it takes. But it's what strikes me about your story is it's the persistence of it. It's just the constant work.
Persistence, you know, people will often stop by and say, you're the hardest worker here, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, there's a lot of, I have a lot of discipline and persistence. And like I said, it's work I like to do. So it doesn't feel like work. In fact, I'm on the opposite spectrum. I need to learn to not be here, right?
Yeah. I was talking to, someone, actually an energy worker who's helping me at the moment, and she said, as we're talking, I'm hearing a lot of art things and art things that you do in, you know, loving art, teaching art, talking about art, making art. But I'm wondering if there are other interests in your life to bring a bit of variety. And I said, no. And I said, you know, honestly, I know you think that's bad, but painting is my love. And if I've got the choice of doing this or going painting, I've done tried a lot of things in my life and I know I like this better. So I'd rather go do this. And there is for me too, that lack of variety, but I haven't found the things that are better than me on my own in my studio. So until I find that, I'm probably not going to branch out too much.
Well, I found something that is going to work for me this year, because I feel like a lot of us had parts of ourselves that were shut down during COVID, you know, because we couldn't do things. And one of my big passions is travel. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be doing a couple of fun things this year. I'm going to Mexico City in a couple of weeks to go to an art show and things like that. So I'm looking at a number of different residency options, and that way you can do your art, but also be in another environment. And one other thing I wanted to tag on to what you said earlier was, you know, there's a lot of people that do interesting things, like, you know, there's artists in this building that will go on summer vacation and they sublet their space to people from another city or whatever, you know, they'll post on Craigslist. And so for someone like you who loves art and might want to experience this for a few months or something, you could always come here and do a sublet for a couple of weeks. And you have to do it for 3 months. That's what they require, the building, but you could come and do it for 3 months and just see what the whole thing is like.
Thank you for telling me that, because I shall certainly be in touch when I want to come back. The one thing I see that we haven't talked about is your passive income stream idea and how that feeds into your business.
Yeah. Well, during COVID, you know, I had like 2 or 3 months where there was no income and I started to get really scared. I had started off the year great. I was having a lot of sales, and then all of a sudden COVID hit. And so open studios were canceled. People were scared to buy anything. And so I was like, wow, what am I going to do? And I got all these people reaching out to me saying, will you offer an online class? And I had no interest in doing an online class, but as people kept asking me from around the world, I thought, what have I got to lose? I've got to create an income stream. And so I created this online class, and it has surprised me because I have now 800 people in it from around the world, and it's self-paced, self-study. So new people come on every day, and I'll be on a vacation and people will be coming in. It's always this nice little source of income. And so I would say that highly recommend people doing something like that if they get to the point where they, you know, feel comfortable. And obviously I've done several in-person classes to kind of have the outline of what would work and what, you know, what wouldn't work. And that's just been delightful. And we have a Facebook group and it's a way to connect. And, you know, people needed something to do during COVID. And so many people were taking online classes because they were stuck at home. And it was just great. Great for me.
I've said on here before, I love teaching. I love it as much as painting. Like, I find it so amazingly rewarding when somebody's like, when they light up and just you realize that you got through and that you've changed something in them. And I know you feel the same. I think if you don't, and some people don't really don't like it, then there are other things, you know, you might look at prints. You might look at cards, you might look at, there's all sorts of other options you can think about. I know an artist who regularly makes books, like simple, small, cheap to print books of his work and then sells those online. So that it's about going back to being creative, isn't it? Thinking of other income streams, because we never know when the next thing's going to hit that's going to change everything. We never know when the next recession, well, we're already in the recession, but how bad it's going to get or any of those things. I think just having the variety is good for you from a business perspective as well, because it's two different parts of your brain, isn't it, when you're teaching or dealing with your students versus when you're working on your own. It's another social aspect of it.
Totally. And I would say one thing that just occurred to me as I was telling that story is that, you know, I often get my best ideas from people like that come to my open studios or people that will write to me and say, teach this online class. I would have never chosen to do that on my own, but it was just a brilliant idea that somebody had that they reached out to me. And at open studios, people will be like, have you ever done prints? Or have you ever printed this on a dress? Or it would be perfect pattern for a dress, or it would be this. And so I've tried all those things, you know, so.
Yeah, I learned so much from students, and often it's the newest painters who mm-hmm. can give you the inspiration often from the way they're working.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think by watching other people paint. They're, you know, like my students come with things I've never seen before. And I used to see that with cooking too. Like I'd be watching them cook and they cook differently than I did. And I would learn a tip or two occasionally.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. I love it. But I think find your own way is always our message on this podcast. So if teaching isn't for you, or I met an artist recently who had zero interest in online teaching. She doesn't like computers. She doesn't like technology, but she does teach in person, as you do. I know you do both. And she loves the in-person teaching. And it was so clear when she was talking about it, the way her eyes lit up as she talked about being in a room with people learning. It was so clear that, and she kept saying, you know, but I know I should be doing the online stuff, but I don't want to. And no, you don't have to. You don't have to if you don't want to. You're good at this, do this. There's always the things that we love to do. There's always more than just the painting, I think, for us. And it's that, I suppose, to wrap up what we're saying is, it's really approaching it from the perspective of a business, which is, I think, what we both did once we decided to do this.
Definitely.
And it's not because we don't love painting, because we both do. It's because we love it so much, we didn't want to not be able to do it.
Totally. You said that perfectly.
Yeah. And the only way to make it sustainable is either to have another full-time job, which is perfectly valid way to do it, so that you don't have to make your art your living. Or if you want to be able to do it all the time, is to make it the thing that pays the bills. And the only way to do that is to put on a business head. And I really hope this conversation has helped some of you. I so appreciate you joining me, Bibi, because you're such a smart cookie when it comes to this stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And you are too.
Please just remind people where they can find you and also where they can find that course.
Yes, they can find the course on my website, which is bibbyart.com, bibbyart.com. And on there, there's information about my online class and also my in-person classes.
And also her amazing, beautiful artwork, which we really haven't talked about art very much in this because we've been very much focused on business. But if you go look at Bibi's art, I find it amazing, wonderful. So thank you once again, Bibi. Alice and I will see you next week. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Well, I've really loved our conversation. If you, no, what do I want to say? I'm going to hold you to the Sausalito thing because
I would love that. Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. I can try to help you get something.
Yeah, brilliant. All right. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye.